So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Lord Chaitanya recommended as one of the three highest principles to follow. These are the translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, first canto, 19th chapter, text number 30.
Samritas,
Samritas,
Datra,
Datra,
Mahan,
Mahan,
Mahiyasam,
Mahiyasam,
Kamarshi,
Kamarshi,
Padarshi,
Padarshi,
Devarshi,
Devarshi,
Tangai,
Tangai,
Yarochataram,
Yarochataram,
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
Yatendur,
Yatendur,
Grahaksha,
Grahaksha,
Samritas tatra mahan mahayasam.
Samritas
tatra mahan mahiyasam.
Samritas tatra mahan mahiyasam.
Maharshi Radha Shideva Shisangai.
Maharshi
Radha Shideva Shisangai.
Maharshi Radha Shideva Shisangai.
Maharshi Radha Shideva Shisangai.
Sukadeva Goswami was then surrounded by saintly sages and demigods, just as the moon is surrounded by stars, planets, and other heavenly bodies. His presence was gorgeous, and he was respected by all. Repeat, Sukadeva Goswami
was then surrounded
by saintly sages
by saintly sages,
and demigods.
And demigods.
Just as the moon is surrounded by stars.
Just as the moon is surrounded by stars.
Planets and other heavenly bodies.
Planets and other heavenly bodies.
His presence was gorgeous.
His presence was gorgeous.
And he was respected by all.
And he was respected.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the great assembly of saintly personalities, there was Vyasadeva, the Ramarshi, Narada, the Devarshi, Parashuram, the great ruler of the Kshatriya kings, etc. Some of them were powerful incarnations of the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami was not known as a Brahmarshi, Brajarshi, or Devarshi, nor was he an incarnation like Narada Vyasa or Parashuram. And yet he excelled them in respects paid. This means that the devotee of the Lord is more honored in the world than the Lord himself. One should therefore never minimize the importance of a devotee like Sukadeva Goswami. Om Giranti Miradhisyakaranjana Salakaya Chakshurunvaitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mirovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Svapadantikam. One of the offenses that we recite every day, one of the things to avoid is offending a devotee. Devotees are very sacred and special people. They're not ordinary people. It's easy to forget this or take it for granted living in the association closely of so many great saintly persons. It is also said that a devotee is like a desire tree. Manchakalpatadubhyasya. We also recite that every day. That we offer our respects to all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. They're just like desire trees, it is said in that famous verse. So sometimes that seems a little obscure. How can a devotee be like a desire tree? Desire tree is a very exceptional thing. There are trees in the spiritual world that can award anything, just like you can get any fruit, or like you can get a mango fruit from a mango tree, but you can't get a pomegranate tree from a mango tree, and you can't get an apple from a mango tree. There are desire trees in the spiritual world that you can get anything. And the story is often repeated that once upon a time, there was such a tree in the Vrindavan area. It was said to be this tree that's the Imlitala tree that recently left its body. It's on the parikrama path. I'm sure many of you have seen it. There's a little temple there. And that once, as the story goes, there was a wood chopper. We don't call them woodsmen anymore because that's not politically correct. I call them wood choppers or wood chopper persons. Anyway, there was a wood chopper. And he was chopping wood, and he didn't realize that he was under this tree, the sacred Imlitala or desire tree, but he was in the Holy Land. So he was chopping wood, and he became very, very tired, and he thought, this blade is very dull, and it takes me a long time to cut the wood. I wish I had a new axe handle, but what can I do? And then lo and behold, boom, there was a brand new, shiny, glistening axe handle, newly sharpened. So he began to cut his wood with renewed enthusiasm, and he could cut a lot more wood a lot faster, and it was beginning to pile up, and then he thought, gee, it was amazing, I just wish that I had a new axe handle. All of a sudden there's a new axe blade, and there's a new axe blade. So I think I'll just wish that instead of having to cut all this wood, it would just cut it by itself and pile up. So he wished that, and boom, all of a sudden there was a big, beautiful, neatly piled stack of wood, just like he had cut it himself, but only better. So then he started to scratch his head, and he realized that there's something unusual going on, and I think I'll just wish for something else. So he wished in his mind for a big feast. He enumerated in his mind all the different things he wanted, samosas and puris and all these great things, chutneys. And all of a sudden, kaboom, there it was, a beautiful dish of 20 different of his favorite preparations. So he began to eat very ravenously, and pretty soon he devoured the entire plate. And what happens after you eat a big plate of prasadam? So he leaned up against this desire tree and fell asleep. Well, he was so sound asleep that when he woke up, he was shivering cold, it was night, it was dark. And he was very afraid that it was dark because he usually was in bed before dark. And he started to think, oh, this is terrible. This is very dangerous. I'm here alone in this forest. What if a big tiger comes and eats me? And all of a sudden, the big tiger came in. Because he was thinking, whatever he wanted happened. So that's the story, and the message of that story, so the moral of it is that we have to be careful in how we think when we're in the sacred holy dham, or to speak of being under a desire tree, because everything we think is magnified thousands of times. I heard Prabhupada himself say this in Mayapur, that whatever we think good is magnified 1,000 times, whatever we think bad is magnified 1,000 times. So purification of the mind is very, very essential, very important. It's described how in the Bhagavad Gita in the 17th chapter, how we have to be very careful to engage in austerity of the mind, to be very pure, to associate with good devotees, to read constantly and to chant, and thereby our mind will become purified. And living in the holy dham is kind of like that. It's a purified place. Srila Prabhupada himself purified this place, and as Prabhupada said, all of the temples of ISKCON, they are like holy places of pilgrimage. They're like Mayapur and they're like Vrindavan, all the places where Prabhupada went. So we have to not only purify our speech and our hearts, but our minds, the way we are thinking, how we think of, especially of devotees, and we have to be very careful according to that, how not to offend devotees, and not to consider them to be ordinary people. I heard recently one tape in which Srila Prabhupada was, he had completed the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. I don't know the exact date or the location, but it was it's a tape you can get, part of the Bhaktivinoda tape ministry. And Prabhupada said in this tape, you'll be glad to know that today I've completed the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. And there were the usual Hari Bowls and cheers and a few Madhanga beats and kartals. Everyone was very happy in the middle of the lecture. And then Prabhupada went on to say how the credit for all this work actually goes to Prajuna, or he called him Panditji at the time, Prajuna, one of Prabhupada's disciples, and he referred to him as my beloved disciple, Prajuna. He said he actually did all the work. He did the editing, did the proofreading, he was doing some of the translation, and due to him, the thing became, in Prabhupada's words, very perfect, he said. And then he said, and his wife was also responsible for doing so much of the work. She did so much typing and so much of the day-to-day work. So I'm very, very grateful to these devotees. And then he went on to point out some other devotees that he said they don't have to be brahmacharis, they don't have to be single, they can be householders, this one's a householder, that one. He was naming various devotees. So Prabhupada was expressing his great gratitude to his devotees for helping him complete such a Herculean task as writing the Chaitanya Chaitamrita and glorifying them right in public in a lecture, like anything. So I began to look up and see how many times Prabhupada was doing this in his writings. We have the folio of. And in many cases, there were 20 or 30, I'm still looking at them, in which Prabhupada is expressing his gratitude for his devotees helping him. He was saying how he didn't get so much help sometimes when he first came, and then all of a sudden people were helping him. And it was a very emotional exchange, how he was glorifying the devotees for making such sacrifices to help him spread his movement, and giving them the credit and the glory for doing all the hard work and for helping him to help his spiritual master to spread Krishna consciousness. And sometimes he was speaking to Indian audiences in India and saying that these boys and girls, they're helping me. And I think it was around about 1971 when he came back to India after having been very successful in the United States. And he had his, what he called his dancing white elephants with him. And he was saying that, some people were asking him in Mumbai about, they don't have illicit sex, they don't gamble, they don't eat meat, they don't take intoxication. But it's hard to imagine that they give up movies. A question was asked something like that. And But said, no, he said they don't go to movies. He said they hate movies. They actually hate movies. And the devotees were nodding their heads. And there's a theater, if you know, just near the Bombay Temple, Chandan Cinema. And the Prabhupada said, yeah, there's a movie just walking distance away from here. They would rather chant Hare Krishna. Just sit and chant Hare Krishna. They won't go to that movie. They won't go. So they were quite amazed that here were some people who come from the land of enjoyment, and they wouldn't even go to a movie. It was very hard for them to compute that. But that was actually the case. I mean, who cares about what do people that live in those countries care about movies? But the population there were very addicted to going to movies. Even though they might have been following all the regular principles, they still like to go to movies somehow. Kali has encroached in such a way that even in the very poor countries, sometimes the movies have become very popular. Once we stayed in a little dharmashala in Andhra Pradesh. This was before television was invading India. And there was a big cinema house. And on top of the cinema house were speakers, big horns, big things, you know, these kind of like this, in all directions, all four directions. And we were sleeping maybe about half a mile away in this little kind of dharmashala type place, very simple. And the movie was blasting the soundtrack all night. We couldn't sleep, actually. It was almost impossible to sleep. From 11 o'clock in the evening till 4 in the morning, it was just blasting and blasting. And it was drawing hundreds and hundreds of people into this cinema so that they would see what the good life in Mumbai was like. They'd give up their farm life and move to the big cities and live in slums and big pipes and in little shanties and work in the horrible factories, and they could never go back to their village because they packed up everything and went. And this trend is still going on. But now you'll see in all the little hutments, they call them, even around the temples. Just a few years ago we walked through, and almost every one of those little huts has a TV arrow sticking out of it. So they're watching the lives of the rich and famous, even in places like that. It's very, very unfortunate. What is happening? How Kali is acting? How the age of Kali is encroaching on everybody, and making people think that the good life is having more and better things that can never be possibly obtained. So the devotees are very special because they're not enamored. Their vision, their consciousness is fixed on the spiritual world. So much they're not concerned with this material world that is coming and going, that is here today and gone tomorrow, that is flickering, that is very alluring, very dazzling to the eye, but not actually satisfying. This is the spiritual dimension. It is mentioned in that verse in the 10th canto that the devotees, they're not concerned with the material world, which is dangerous, very dangerous at every step. And they consider that this material, that the pleasure of this material world is like the water in the calf's footprint. Very little compared to the great ocean of transcendental bliss. That's the difference that the one who is devotional sees in the material world and the spiritual world. The material world actually has no pleasure. It appears to be, but it's like a mirage. It's glittering, and it's like, oh, I'm going to get my water at last, but then there's nothing when one gets there. Nothing there. So one has a kind of healthy pessimism about the material world, that it's okay, but it's really not okay. It's not the place where we take shelter of. So the devotee is not an ordinary person because there's a kind of higher intelligence that sees that this material world is not actually the real place to be. And the devotee is glorified, especially glorified in this world, even more than those who have great positions, like here it's mentioned, the Rajarshis, the Ramarshis, the Devarshis. They're the saints among the demigods, the saints among the kings, the saints among the kshatriyas, of the brahmins. These are all very elevated positions. But the point Prabhupada is making here is that it is not by virtue of position. In English or Latin we have this word ex officio. It means that by virtue of the office, the person is considered great. But the real greatness is not one who is great by position. The Prabhupada is known once for saying that the person who wants fame the least gets it the most. The devotee is eternally famous. We were watching, I guess you saw too, the life of Prabhupada when he was a householder. how even the sannyasis and brahmacharis, they exhorted him that he should give the talk, that he should give the speech. And they were more and more impressed with his great qualities. Oh, hi, it was so wonderful. And so we hear talk sometimes of the self-effulgent personality. Well, Prabhupada was like that even in his householder days. It wasn't a question of whatever his status of life might have been. He was in ways he would carry himself as a householder, just a sinful person involved in pounds, shillings and pence, and getting money and collecting money for his business. But even then, he was greatly respected by the members of the Gaudiya Math, even those who were dressed in saffron. He was extraordinary. And in Prahlad Maharaj's case also, he was surrounded by, like Shukadeva, by great demigods. And they were all there. They were present when Lord Krishna made his appearance. We mentioned this. And they were afraid. They were actually all afraid, even though they were great learned scholars and great empowered beings. They were given great responsibilities by the Lord, but they were terrified. And Prahlad Maharaj was very bold and very unafraid. So he was pushed forward that you should go and pacify the Lord. He's very angry and we can't approach him. So as a Nityasiddha, as a great devotee, as an example of a great personality, Prahlad Maharaj went forward to pacify the Lord and got his benediction. But no one else, irrespective of position, could approach the Lord in his angry position but a devotee. So a devotee is a very unusual, extraordinary person. Prabhupada had the ability to empower devotees. And even those who, he was writing, as we read in Chaitanya, in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, he was writing back to his friends back in India to get this kind of help and that kind of help. But he found help among the Malecha and Yavana community. He found that, as it is said, there are devotees in every street corner, we just have to find them. And that Vaishnava can't be ascertained by bodily type or by nationality or by ethnic origin or religious persuasion, or by age, or by gender, by anything else. A devotee is a devotee. And Prabhupada said they're on every street corner. Once he was asked, how many devotees do you have? Some reporter asked him. Prabhupada's answer was, oh, they're unlimited. He was shocked. So Prabhupada then went on to say that, well, of course, they don't all know it. But there are devotees everywhere, and of all types. And we just don't know where they come from. We don't know. The person who delivers the mail, the postman, he might be your child's guru someday. We really don't know, do we? So devotees, they're unusual. And they're like desire trees. They really are like desire trees. That's a very hard thing to understand. I had a little experience yesterday. I was having some trouble with my computer, and Radhika Kaman came over. We tortured him for about 3 hours. And instead of taking 3 days or 3 weeks, which would have taken me to figure out what was wrong, he figured it out in 3 hours. So, I mean, he's a devotee, and he's like a desire tree, because this is, of course, material knowledge, but even materially, devotees can give us so much help, so much. I was, for a time, living with a devotee who was also very computer literate. I could have read through hundreds of pages of manuals to learn what I learned, but I learned it all just by asking the devotee. I learned everything. So devotees are like desire trees in so many ways. And not just that they're going to give us the transcendental knowledge, but that they really can help us in many, many ways. So Prabhupada empowered even the Malechas, even the Yavanas, and brought out their devotional qualities, and they became pure. So when Prabhupada went to India, the land of Brahma and Krishna, and the land of Vedic culture, and the dancing white elephants were there, people were shocked because this India is kind of the bastion of the Vedic culture. People are used to their own way of doing things and seeing gurus and sannyasis who are of their own bodily type. And here were these shaven up people and girls in saris, and Prabhupada was saying that they don't even go to movies. And it was a radical kind of transformation that occurred in the consciousness of people. This was Prabhupada's methodology, you might say, to bring these people back and to show everywhere that Vedic culture was so powerful that the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so pure and so perfect that he saw, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw, the people of all different origins, of all different nationalities would converge in Mayapur and they would dance and they would chant Jai Satchinandana. But this was not just an idle prediction. This was not just a thought, not just a vision of some transcendental madman, but that this was actually the truth. And Prabhupada had absolute faith that this was going to happen. He had absolute courage and faith. And when he brought his dancing white elephants back to India, and there were some from Iran, they weren't all Europeans, they were of all nationalities, some from Africa, some black, maybe, complexion people. That was evidence that this spiritual movement had no boundaries, no national boundaries. That Lord Chaitanya's prediction, Pritivityachajata, Nagaradigam, Sarvatra Pachara, Vayavimorinam, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's vision of the future were reality. They weren't just some scriptural words, they weren't just a few visions, but they were real. So Prabhupada gave the system of empowerment. He empowered the people who had no sense of Vedic knowledge. Of course some did, but just for example, he empowered them. And this was the method of being very transparent, of taking up the teaching, the method. And Prabhupada would often say that, why are they dancing like this? Why are they not going to movies? And why are they giving up everything? And why are they shaving their hair off? When a man shaves his head off, he's really out of the running for most women. I mean, that's, people are very attached to their hair. I guess today things may be different, but they were giving up everything in material life. And why were they doing it? Prabhupada used to say that they are doing it because I'm not changing anything. I'm not adjusting things. Sometimes in the churches we see bands playing their rock music. They're trying to get their followers back. But they, in the Church of England, I read recently that they've lost 80% of their followers in the last 20 years. So they're doing all kinds of things. And in our Hare Krishna Day, we talked about this particular reverend who had a bar in the back of his church. Now they're trying so hard, so desperately. And Prabhupada said, no, the only reason that they're following Krishna consciousness is because I haven't changed anything. So he called Bhagavad Gita as it is. I haven't changed a thing. This is the original, pure Vedic knowledge, unchanged, just as it is. And because I haven't changed anything, they're following. That's the reason. It's pure, it's original. That's the reason that they're giving it up, because nothing has changed. And most of his audiences that were involved in some kind of, wherever they were in the world, in some kind of Vedic thought, whether it be yoga or meditation or some psychological philosophy that involves some Vedic thought, was all impure. So Prabhupada said, because this is the original thing. And once he quoted, there's a famous Sanskrit, it's a Hindi proverb, I don't know the Hindi, but it says basically that if you tell the truth, people will come at you with loggerheads. And if you lie, you can illusion the whole planet. And this is true because we know from our own experience that for every genuine spiritual person, there's probably 1,000 charlatans. So Krishna consciousness, in one sense, is walking a very straight line, very narrow line. It's a kind of razor's edge Krishna consciousness because it's ascertaining what is real and what is not real. So it's mentioned here that Shukadeva Goswami, even though he was surrounded by great Rajarshis, Brahmarshis, Devarshis, was like a moon among the stars. The stars are very insignificant compared to the moon. And the great Chandrajoya, Chandrajoya Mandir, the great moon of Lord Chaitanya is rising in Mayapur. The greatness of Srila Prabhupada is becoming more and more prominent. And even Prabhupada's followers, they are in society, they are like the moons among the stars. There we hear the word self-effulgent. They do, they shine out. There's something extraordinary about them. They're considered saintly persons, not ordinary persons. They do shine out. They have a perspective. When someone gets up to speak, and it's happening at every moment of every day, someone is getting up and speaking before people somewhere about something. And there's always a kind of, you know, well, I'm glad I came here, but I'm also very eager to leave. But when a person speaks from Bhagavad Gita, or speaks from the Vedic knowledge, that's extraordinary. And it's not everyone that may listen, but those who do listen understand that this is not at all ordinary knowledge. This is extraordinary. And the people who speak this knowledge are not ordinary people. They are speaking knowledge which bodes for positive change in the whole society. There's an agenda that Prabhupada had for what we might call social change. It wasn't just to preserve Vedic culture. It was to see an improvement in the world. And it's mentioned that the devotee of the Lord is honored more than the Lord himself. Of course, it's mentioned in the world. And Prabhupada is glorified, and all the devotees are glorified. And we were reading about some of the different faith traditions yesterday, how people wanted to know what was Jesus like, what was Buddha like, what was Muhammad like. And we're very fortunate that we live in the shadow, historically, very close to Srila Prabhupada, and we remember what he was like. And every little thing that he did, the way he would lift his pen, the way he would look at somebody, the way he would walk, the way he would take his massage, the way he would dictate, the way he would get into a car, important to us. And Lord Krishna, by comparison, of course we read about the Lord and we try to become very attentive to all the activities of the Lord. But here was Prabhupada was walking on this very ground, and we remember how he looked and how he walked. So that's our glorification. Of course, we glorify the Lord as much as we can, but we have this remembrance of a living personality, a human personality, who was an acting, who was very addicted. I was talking with Dave Amrita yesterday, Maharaj, and there was a conversation that took place with Prabhupada and John Lennon, Yoko Ono, and George Harrison. And he was saying how, in one sense, this was a very kind of superficial talk, and they were talking a little bit, small talk, but it was actually a very deep conversation. And one of the questions that arose during this conversation was, from the audience, well, how do we know? There's so many people that say, I'm it, I'm the spiritual master, and I know what's right, and you should follow me, and I'm the guru, and I'm the leader. But how do we know? And this is a very perplexing question, and it was, to us who were there, something that we were a little concerned. How is Prabhupada going to deal with this? Because he didn't want to say, well, I'm the one, you should come to me. And he didn't, on the other hand, just want to say, well, everything is equal. Prabhupada's answer was that you have to find the person that's most addicted to Krishna. What a shocking thing to hear. Most addicted. Use the word addicted. When we hear the word addicted, we kind of think of people who have a kind of bodily addiction to certain abusive substances. But Prabhupada said he's addicted to Krishna. That's the person who is the right person to hear from. The person who's most addicted to Krishna. And that's actually what Prabhupada was. He was empowered because he was addicted to Krishna. And for that reason, everything he did was very important to us. And therefore, we tend to glorify Prabhupada. Maybe I'm doing it more than I should in class. But we tend to glorify him more than we glorify the Lord. And partly it's because we remember him. We have all the tapes, we have so many videos, we have the personal association, we have remembrance of it being very nearby. So the devotee of the Lord is very much glorified. And that's why Shukadeva Goswami was given a seat of honor, why all the great kartas of the material world that were there, they were present, the demigods, there were jarshis, there were rishis, they were all glorifying him, they wanted to hear him, because he was a great devotee of the Lord, not an ordinary person. He was empowered, he was addicted. He had become the speaker of the Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker of the Bhagavatam. So because of his addiction, we might say, he was very glorified in society. Everyone came to hear him. And then there's some description about how he was, how he looked, how his body, how he had this kind of physiognomy that everyone was very attracted to. There was a little book published by Anika Dundui, and I don't remember the name of it, but in one of the, he just had a lot of quotes from Prabhupada, but one of them said that we will be judged by our character, our behavior, and our preaching. So I kind of tried to find this in the books, and I couldn't find it anywhere, our character, our behavior, and our preaching. So I thought it was a very nice quote, but I just thought, well, if I can't find it, I'm not going to sort of stand by this as being something Prabhupada said. But finally, I did find it. Prabhupada lectures. And he says that. It's either in a lecture or in a book. He says, we'll be our character and our behavior and our preaching is very, very important. So it's interesting how the sequence went, because he puts character and behavior in front of preaching. It's not that preaching might not be more important, but in this particular section, Prabhupada said character first, then behavior, and then preaching. So there's a saying in the material world that I can't hear what you're saying because I'm hearing what you are more. So it is the character and the behavior of people like Subhadeva Goswami and Prabhupada that is very important to us. We see it's the overall way that a person carries oneself. It's the tone even. Or sometimes it says the nature of vibration is what's important. Sometimes devotees don't want to speak. Like me, I'm kind of, you know, like when I have to talk before devotees, I get kind of nervous. I can speak before hundreds of people and I'm not nervous, but when I talk before devotees, somehow, I'm getting used to it now, but it's, you sort of feel, I don't know, like you're really kind of on the spotlight. You might make a little mistake, get one verse wrong or Sanskrit word wrong, and then everyone's on your case. They might not say it, but they'll say it to each other, or they'll think it. So it's kind of a scary situation, really. But when sometimes I would be very hesitant to give lectures, someone would say, well, it's the nature of your vibration that people care about. It's not what you say. It's not how many shlokas you memorize. It's not how many stories you know. It's not how well you've mastered all the names of the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavad Gita. So it's the nature of the way we are. It's the nature of our vibration, the way we carry ourselves, so to speak. So in Prabhupada's saying this, the character and the behavior, they're very important. Once I had an experience where I was driving in England, and I was kind of sticking out into the intersection farther than I should have, and someone was making a turn, and he had to go sort of way around me in order to get to the street I was in. And he had a turban on. He was a Sikh, I guess. And of course I was shaved. And he went by me very fast, but not so fast that he couldn't say one sentence right almost in my ear. And the sentence was, "You disgrace your religion." I thought, wow, of all the things he could have said, of all the things he could have done. And I was just sticking out maybe 5 or 6 feet too far at the intersection. I was a disgrace to the Hare Krishna movement. And I thought, all right, you know, I've got to be careful. So Prabhupada quoted that verse that the black spot on the white tablecloth is very, very conspicuous. And a person wearing religious clothes, whether it's a saffron or it's a Christian clothes or whatever, they make a little mistake, they do something wrong, and it's all over. Everyone knows it, and the whole religion is blamed, and it's a very dark spot. So it says sometimes that a sadhu has no private life. We're public figures in a way. Every time we go out, we go to the shop, or we're out in public somewhere, we're representing everything. And it's, people aren't even hearing us. They're just looking how we're acting, how we're walking. Or maybe we have some little exchange in the shop. You know, they're checking us out. They're seeing how we act, how we talk, what we say, what we do. So our character, our values, our behavior. Once a devotee was given in America $5 extra in change. And so he gave me too much, and he gave it back to the cashier. And when that man came back a few weeks later, the cashier remembered him. And he gave him something, you know, he had some kind of extra vegetables, and he said, "Here, I'm giving you this for your temple." He said, "I want to tell you that you're the first person that ever told me I gave him too much change." It really happened. So that's part of the whole thing, you know, the character. Sometimes we think that because we have the perfect philosophy that we're following Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, that, you know, we don't really have to be good drivers, or we should keep the extra change, or we, you know, it really doesn't matter. But people notice these things. And when we vow to take initiation, when we say, okay, no sex, no gambling, no eating, no intoxication, sometimes we forget that really, what does that mean? That means we're clean. That means that we're austere. That means we're truthful. That means we follow the principles. They may be sub-religious principles, but we're merciful. We're all these things. We have to be these things, because these are how a lot of people, maybe most people, are going to judge us more than by how we lecture or what we say. We're not going to have an opportunity to talk to a lot of people, but they're going to see us. We're going to be out among them. And they do hear us. And what we say and how we act, how we carry ourselves are very, very important. So character, behavior are very important, more than what we say sometimes, and more than even the positions that we might attain as devotees of Krishna. It's how we act. When we teach, sometimes we're teaching systems of education in our seminars and our communications and management. We stress, and book distribution, which was the first course, we stress the values and the principles above everything that we have to know. What are we trying to do? And what are the values we're trying to inculcate when we give a book to someone? Are we just trying to get money? Or are we trying to show that this book represents a body of saintly persons? Obviously, it's the latter. So all that has been built into these courses. how we behave and how we carry ourselves. And by understanding that this is as much of an integral and important part of our philosophy as learning the verses and learning what the philosophical permutations are, what the points of the philosophy are, then we become perceived as being as proper representatives. Once Prabhupada is quoted saying that, "My devotees are such perfect ladies and gentlemen that no one can find any fault in them." There's a famous interview. Someone asked him, "Well, what's the difference between your people following Krishna and a Christian person following Christ?" And Prabhupada said that. And then he added, "Therefore, I teach them not to eat meat." Just to show that this is part of morality, that we don't believe that eating meat is moral, or killing animals, or sanctioning, or contributing to it. So, I'll read the verse again, so we don't get too late. Shukadeva Goswami was then surrounded by saintly sages and demigods, just as the moon is surrounded by stars, planets, and other heavenly bodies. His presence was gorgeous, and he was respected by all. I just want to add one thing, that this is a word that we don't use too much, gorgeous. But Prabhupada adopted that word. He liked it very much, and he especially used it in relationship to deity worship. And these deities, I wanted to say, are very, very beautiful today, the way they're dressed and the way they look. And it's not very frequently used, but Prabhupada, it was just the perfect word. It was amazing how he found just the right words. And he used this word a lot, gorgeous, in relationship to the deities, and how they looked, how beautiful they were. So, any comments or questions? Madhuri?
Maharaj, it's quite amazing. In the video that we've been watching of Prabhupada's path, in fact, his Siddhanta Maharaj was quoted as saying, referring to Prabhupada, that what need is there of many stars when there is a moon?
That's true, yeah. He said that. Referring to, he had the vision that Prabhupada would be of all his followers, Prabhupada would be the moon, they would be like the stars. So he had these very prophetic statements. I think he also said that in time he will do everything. Buddha is saying that. So he just could see straight through to the soul of Srila Prabhupada, that he would be the emerging person that would carry forward Lord Chaitanya's movement. Yes?
What do we mean when we're talking about a devotee?
What do we mean when we're talking about a devotee? In a very broad sense, we mean everybody. Because, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's in the 15th chapter, Manai Vamso Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana Mana Shastra Nindriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati, that everyone is my part and parcel, Krishna says. So in that sense, everyone is a devotee. Prabhupada even wrote us a letter about that. He said that in a larger sense, everyone is a devotee. When we talk about it in a more narrow sense, we talk of a person who is a pure devotee, or an exclusive devotee, one who is, as Prabhupada said, most addicted to Krishna. And that kind of devotee is someone who gets no pleasure out of anything in the material world, or talking about anything in the material world, or talking about anything material other than Krishna. And that is a pure devotee, or nityasiddha. Sometimes Prahlada Maharaja describes as nityasiddha, one who is pure from birth. When Prabhupada was asked about that, are you a nityasiddha or pure devotee? He wrote back, it's a famous letter actually, I think it was written to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He said, "There was never a time when I did not think about Krishna." And he talked about how he had little dolls to play with that were Krishna dolls, and he had deities to worship when he was a child. So there are different gradations of devotees, and one who is in the highest stage of devotional service sees the whole world as devotees, and that's the Paramahansa stage, or the Uttama Adhikara stage. But there are three stages, the Kanista, the Majjhima, and the Uttama, and we are in the, as Prabhupada told us, we're in the middle stage, the Majjhima Adhikara stage. And in this stage, we are to worship the Supreme Lord, make friends with the devotees, And avoid the people who are very, very envious. There's a verse that goes, I can't think of it just now, but these are the symptoms of a devotee. In the Majjhima Arihara states, yat karoti cha majjhima, the verse ends that one should be a devotee who is friendly to all devotees, but who avoids those people who are envious. Valisheshu dvishatsucha, that's part of that verse. And sees, this is the fourth thing, sees all people as bala, which means children, as his own children. Worships the Supreme Lord, sees all people as innocent, makes friends with the devotees, and avoids the envious. Those four things are the symptoms of a Majjhima Adhikari and the things that we aspire to. So we worship the deity, we give all of our love to Krishna. We see all people as potential devotees, Bali Sheshu Dvisachucha. We Premi Maitre Prapopiksha, we make friends with the devotees, intimate friendship with the devotees. Now it doesn't mean that we can be intimate with everybody, but our intimate friends are devotees. Those we may have one or two or three, but they are our friends. And those who are envious, we stay away from. Of course, they are a small minority, those who are very envious. Once Prabhupada was asked, he said, but Prabhupada, I speak, I go to so many engagements with devotees living in the temple. But people, they're not really interested. Most people are not really interested in what I have to say. So Prabhupada's retort was, then what's the point of preaching? Why are you talking anyway? You think everyone wants to hear you? You know, if you're not preaching, you're not changing people's minds. What's the point? So in other words, of course, preaching is the thing. Most people aren't going to be interested. But if the one person or two or three or whoever takes some steps towards Krishna, and maybe thousands of people will take a tiny, tiny step, maybe they'll just eat a little prasadam, and maybe one or two or three people will take a giant step towards Krishna, then it's worth it. That's the way the Krishna consciousness movement is spreading. So this is Majjhima Adhikari. This is the kind of devotees that we are. We're going to preach and preach because we see there's potential in everyone. We're going to reveal our hearts to the devotees, to our friends and devotees. We're going to worship the Supreme Lord. And only those people who are very demonically envious, who are really, and that's not most people, who are really going to attack us or avoid us, are we going to avoid? And to avoid them, if they're really inimical, we'll just avoid them. So we're in that stage of devotion, we're Majjhima Adhikaris. And of course, we're aspiring to be Uttama Adhikaris, to see everything as the spiritual world, but we're not quite there yet. So when we talk of devotee, we speak of many types of devotees, but this is what Prabhupada wanted us to be. He wanted us to be preachers, basically, and to see that everyone has the potential. Does that help?
It's still a little grey.
Pardon?
It's still a little grey. I mean, how do we treat congregational members, for instance?
How do we treat them?
Yeah, they just come along on a Sunday and that's it. In a lot of cases, they're not, but there's a lot of them that are really first-class devotees. So obviously we can see some of them, but the others that are not self-revolting. Just look like, you know, they're coming for a burger and they want a yak and smoke a cigarette around the back.
But that person who's smoking a cigarette around the back might become a pure devotee. I mean, we don't know. My point is that it's always going to be a little bit gray because when we're preaching, we just don't know what effect it's going to have. I know a devotee who carried Bhagavad Gita around for 5 years, didn't have anything to do with the devotees, and then became a full-time devotee, got initiated. Couldn't get past the first chapter in Bhagavad Gita. Tough chapter. But we really don't know. And those who might appear to be kind of effulgent or sitting up front and shaving their heads, they might not, you know, in the long run, be as good as the person who's smoking around the back. I mean, we just really don't know. And preaching, as Prabhupada said, is a thankless task. It might be 5 years. Prabhupada himself got his instructions early. And some people say, well, why did it take so many, 30 years? Prabhupada said, well, it's a long time. I had to prepare. Lots of time. And he's a pure devotee, but some people didn't see it. So according to our vision, we just don't really know. And it's always going to be a bit gray, because preaching is a thankless task. And when Prabhupada preached, he didn't know. He was preaching to Malechus. And he at one time, I think it was San Francisco, some lady was muttering something under her breath, just going on some kind of hallucinatory things. And, you know, talking really loud and interrupted the lecture. Prabhupada was heard to say under his breath, "This is the darkest of ages." But who knows? You know, even persons like that, somehow they can become saved, you know, they can become liberated. So when we speak of devotee, it's always going to be a bit of grace. Generally, we talk of people who are living in the temples or are showing some signs of doing devotional service. They're doing a lot of service. And that's generally what, in general, are the people who are getting pulled into the center of Krishna consciousness. But we never really can know for sure. So we also have to be a little bit open-minded. And the only people we're really avoiding are not so much the people that are smoking in on the street, but people who are openly envious to us, because we want to give everybody the opportunity. That's why Prabhupada said open restaurants. He gave one directive. He said, don't, in America, it was around 1974, his secretary wrote and said, he said, we're not going to open any more temples in the United States. He said, just restaurants. Restaurants with reading rooms. And why? He said, because then people will appreciate the cultural position. So, he said, we have enough temples. In other words, the temples will always attract people who are ready to go the distance. And the restaurants will attract a very larger number of people who aren't ready to go the distance. They're just going to come, well, it's nice people, nice atmosphere, nice food, nice folks. But it might take 5 years, 10 years, 20 years till they become devotees. But Prabhupada liked that. At one point he said that we should have more of that, because he had this very expansive vision of wanting to get everybody involved somehow, even though it might take a long time. And he also wrote in some of his letters that some are not ready to move into the temples. He said it's better, he wrote this in letters, better you should stay at home, read the books, become convinced about the velocity. Then, if you feel like you want to move into a temple, then do it. But Prabhupada had the vision that most people, as we see now, are devotees, they're not living in temples. This is the sort of core. But he had that vision that you can be a devotee and not live in a temple. And you can be just like Prabhupada himself. He wasn't living in the temple, but he became the leader of this different succession. So it's hard to know. It's very hard to know what's going on inside. Does that help? Okay. We have time for one more.
Sometimes, from my experience, I see that sometimes some of the congregation members are following even nicer than the devotees that are living in the temples.
What happens? Sometimes. I mean, we just can't always tell. I mean, in general, those who are in the temples are pretty, they're the most committed. They're really committed. And people expect a level of commitment that is extraordinary. You know, rising early and strictly following the principles of all one's waking hours being devoted to devotional service. But sometimes we see that there are people who are following more strictly than aren't in the temples. It happens. That may happen more and more. You have a question?
Maharaj, you used a really nice expression, healthy pessimism, about the material world.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it said that devotees are very negative because of the that thing that we do have about that. So how can we overcome that? That mood that maybe we're giving out, because we
want to
appear that we're chanting and being happy also.
Once, I hate to make this a Prabhupada said class, but I'm going to get some of my own personal experiences to answer your questions, because I don't believe that we can live that way. But he did say once that Krishna consciousness is a process of recreation, singing and dancing and feasting. And that's a kind of way that we try to not only try to portray ourselves, but we actually feel that. We feel that we're happy, and we are happy. We're happy because we're inwardly happy. We're not subject to what happens when people have their safe taken away from where you work. And, you know, they got reeled down because someone robbed them, $4,000. But, they're pretty successful people. They own a store, and they're pretty happy, pretty upbeat. But they have, they're down moments. And nobody who's got everything believes that they don't get depressed sometimes. We were talking with Dave Lombard yesterday, he was saying how when he was first, he just graduated from college or something with his friend, and they heard Prabhupada in New York saying, the material world has no happiness in it. It's all foul. And there's no one is going to be happy in this material world. And if you think you're going to enjoy, you're wrong. And he was very, very heavy. And then he said that just blew them away, or blew his friend away. They never came back to the temple. If you think there's anything to enjoy in this material world, you are wrong, because there's nothing to give you any kind of pleasure in this material world. So, I mean, we know that. We're devotees, and we know that's true. But we also know that when people come to Krishna consciousness, that we don't try to get them to just give everything up all of a sudden, because they're attached to certain things that give them pleasure and happiness. So when we talk of about realization, we're talking about preaching according to the audience. Who we're talking to? Are they new people? Have they been here? They need to hear that the material world is not a civilized place. They need to hear that they can just add Krishna consciousness to their present situation. A lot of people, yes. If they just add the spiritual dimension to their life, Prabhupada said that many times. Just add Krishna consciousness. We're not trying to take anything away. We're not asking that you should renounce everything. And when Prabhupada was trying to give his wife initiation, remember, she was saying, well, I had to have my tea. I can't take my tea away. And she was very worried that it was taking other things away from her. Because she could understand that this is her husband, for example. So there's many different ways to look at preaching. When we try to get people involved, people who are in the spirit of enjoyment, we obviously don't want to say that we've just got to throw everything away and give everything up. And because sometimes we do preach that way, and we need to preach that way. Prabhupada used to preach that way because he didn't want devotees to be at all enamored by anything material. He didn't want his followers to think that there was anything really worthwhile in the material world, because the goal is to get to the spiritual world. So if we think, if there's just a trace of wanting to enjoy anything, wanting to be like Krishna, wanting to really be the enjoyer instead of giving everything to Krishna, then we won't get back to the spiritual world. So Prabhupada used to preach very, very heavily sometimes to us. But when he would preach to other people, he would go into their homes, or some very wealthy or a person who's very used to a very high standard of enjoyment, Prabhupada would go all the way out of his way to make sure he had a chair, make sure that the food was the best, that the accommodation was the very, very best. So he didn't make them sleep on the floor and live in grass mats and just eat raw khichdi. He went way out of his way to make sure that everything was very comfortable and very nice. So according to the audience, the time, place, and circumstance, we're very positive people, but we can't do it on the basis of we're giving up the materialistic pleasures of life to new people. To really depend. It just depends on who we're preaching to. So I think we'll have to end here. Thank you very much. And Srila Prabhupada is a great personality. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. He's the great moon among the many stars. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the great shining light among all the literatures of the world. Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Ki Jai.